nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone. We're broadcasting live from our palatial studios here in Dripping Springs, Texas. As you can see, we actually have a plant and everything. So good morning. It is almost the end of the last day, July 29, 2020. We have a financial fun show for you today. We monthly talked to one of our faves, Richard Mayberry, of Early Warning Report. He's been studying the financial world, philosopher, and author for many, many years, and he's here on the last Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock this morning, a couple hours. But before then, we are going to talk about gold. There's gold in them there hills. As you probably know, if you've been following it, gold has been on a terror, as they say, over the last two or three days. So we're going to talk to a fellow who's really into gold. His name is Jan Nieuwenhuis. I think I'm close there. I'll find out. Nieuwenhuis. And he's a precious metal guy for VOIMA, via VOIMA Gold, V-O-I-M-A, in Finland. And he specializes in gold. He talks about the Chinese gold market, the physical gold market, derivatives market, central banks gold, all kinds of fun things that we love to study, and the international monetary system. So we'll have plenty to talk about because of our fortunate schooling from currency historian Andrew Goss for 25 years. So I know just enough to keep me out of trouble. And we talk to people like Jan Nieuwenhuis to keep us in line to see if we can make some sense out of this. Hold on a second. Let me do the right thing here. Mr. Nieuwenhuis in Finland, Amsterdam. Good morning.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning to you. It's actually my afternoon.
In your afternoon, yeah.
But thanks for having me in the show. Yes, I'm in Amsterdam, and I work for a company in Finland.
In Finland. And I'm sorry, do you pronounce it? I should have asked you. VOIMA Gold? VOIMA Gold?
Yes. It means power in Finnish.
Oh, power. Power Gold.
They told me, yeah.
How long have you been doing the gold thing?
I actually started working in the gold industry in 2014.
Oh.
I was a sound engineer actually in movies, and then after the financial crisis, I started reading books about economics, and I started a blog in 2013 because I did some investigation into the Chinese gold market.
Oh.
And I was offered a job in 2014 at a bullion dealer, and I've been doing that ever since, actually.
Very interesting. And so you, I came across you when you were doing you did an article about a gold standard, right? A possible gold standard?
Yeah.
So let's dig right into that, and then we'll talk about the current situation and see what's going on. In your opinion, let's do locally first, because that'll make more sense. So what's up with gold now? Could it possibly be, Jan, this could be a big move in gold, or as they say, nothing goes straight up. We could go to 2,000 and then get banged back down, but yeah, I know it's tough to predict when it involves the future, but what do you think?
Yeah. Everybody always wants to know what's happened to the gold price in the near term. I really don't know. I know the fundamentals, and that I expect it to rise substantially in the medium and long term. In the short term, I don't really know. I know it has been going up a lot and very steep in the last couple of months. Possibly it can correct. You also saw, when was it, 2 days ago when it punched, it nearly hit 2,000.
Right.
And then obviously there were some, or it hit $2,000 an ounce. And you saw some profit takers, and it, you know, it goes down. But the fundamentals are very strong. So I see it rising. It will probably continue to rise, although there can be a pullback if, for example, government stimulus programs like you have in the US and also in Europe, the economy is still being driven now by the government stimulus.
Yeah.
If that is being reduced, you can get a collapse in terms of deflation. You can get some deflationary forces at work, and gold tends to go down. The price of gold tends to go down when there's deflation. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we have so much debt, right? The debt burden versus debt versus GDP, that governments cannot allow deflation, because when prices go down, income goes down, and the debt burden becomes heavier. Mm-hmm. So they will likely not tolerate deflation. So they will keep the stimulus going, keep printing, and that is why the gold price is likely to continue to rise. The small, for the day traders, if they want to think about this, when deflation takes hold, it can go down a bit, but I'm very bullish in the long term.
So we are seeing that there's probably going to be another stimulus package here, and it's probably going to be probably come out of $2 trillion. I think the Democrats want 3,
yeah,
and the Republicans want 1, so they'll probably settle on 2, and I think that's going to add, I don't know what the number is, I haven't looked at the Fed's balance sheet today, I can do that, but it'll probably be, if they do $2 trillion, Jan, it's probably going to be, I don't know what, $4 trillion new money in the last 3 or 4 months, that's a huge. So you think that's what's really driving this gold upbeat now?
Well, what you're seeing is, in my opinion, is kind of like the end game of the monetary system as we have seen it in the last couple of decades, right? So the central bankers were managing the money supply, the fiat money supply. It was unbacked. And of course, it's very tempting politically and also from a bureaucratic point of view to stimulate a little bit more when there's a downturn and lower interest rates and don't take the pain, mm-hmm. Recessions in a normal economy are very welcome. So the bad companies are being flushed out and the healthy companies can take their place. But, with these central bankers in a fiat-based monetary system, we had so much stimulus and so much fighting against corrections and so much bubbles being blown that they've destroyed the economy, right? They've destroyed the price mechanism. All the prices are, the price mechanism are the traffic lights in the economy that signal everybody what to do. Mm-hmm. And if you destroy the price mechanism, everything turns to financial mush. And that's what we're seeing right now. And especially also because of the low interest rates, there was a sense, in a couple of that still, the government bonds were risk-free assets. And those were the predominant store of value for the pension funds and sovereign wealth funds and et cetera. But with these very low interest rates and also the possibility of default, they're becoming more risky. So, yeah, these are the fundamentals for gold. Gold is very much, this chart you probably see everywhere now, it's very much correlated to the real interest rates in the U.S., right? So if the benchmark in the U.S., the interest rates on the 10-year government bond, if you subtract inflation from that, you get the real interest rate, and that's a negative 1%, negative 1.5% right now. And the more negative that goes, the higher the gold price goes.
Interesting. So, let's go back to that math, because I've never heard that. That's curious. So you take the interest rates that the banks get from the central bank, right? What is it, a quarter point? Oh, no, I'm seeing. No, you said the 10-year. The 10-year.
Yeah.
And that's about what, 0.3? 0.3 or something?
I think the 10-year note is now doing 0.5.
0.5.
It's going lower and lower.
And then you subtract that
also
from what?
Because of the central bank printing. Mm-hmm. You take the 0.5 and then you subtract inflation from it, right? Because you get 0.5% a year from the government bond, but there's also inflation in goods and services. So you have to subtract that from your dividend, your interest rate. And then you enter negative territory. So the real interest rate, this is called, is a minus 1.5 approximately by now. So, right, if you hold this bond and you get 0.5% interest rate, actually you're losing money because the inflation gets you.
And the inflation that so we see, the CPI, what they call the CPI, that's not really accurate, is it? I mean, they leave out a lot of things.
It's a very dubious number, of course, because, I mean, there are a lot of products in the society, and it's interesting, you know, I tend to use it for just a ballpark figure, but, you know, they're housing, for example, or, you know, it's a basket, and they weigh housing for, let's say, 5% and, you know, healthcare for 10%. But, of course, that's, you know, who decides? And also, yeah, those are averages. And there's, of course, nobody in the economy that has the same behavior in purchasing products. So this number is an average. But maybe, you know, I like to spend more money on this and the number doesn't fit me and so forth. But it's interesting that a lot of, let's say, like televisions and telephones and technology becomes cheaper and cheaper, but things like healthcare become more expensive, if you look at the basket. But it's some people research a lot about the CPI number. I just take it for what it is because it's the best I have.
We had a friend of ours that called it the CPI and other fairy tales, is the way he put it. You
know? Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe one thing to add is that, of course, we have been printing money now since 2008, a lot, you know, from the central bank, and we haven't seen much of CPI inflation officially, right? Now, partly that is true, but partly it's also that the money printed went into assets like real estate, the stock market, bonds, etc. So you get asset inflation, and these assets are not part of the basket in CPI. So, it's like I said, they've done a lot of damage to the economy.
Yes, sir. Jan Nieuwenhuis, right? Is that good?
Yes.
Anyone else? Oh, pretty good. He's in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
If you care to join us, Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. You can also use the telephone, 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. Well, you had mentioned it earlier, and some other people, Jan, are out there talking about this idea of the whole thing is just built on too much debt, fiat currency, the Federal Reserve, 100 years old. We just got to do something else. And they call it a reset of some kind, a reset. Do you think there's something big brewing? And talk about, if so, how do you see that playing out? What would that look like?
Yeah, I think there will be a reset. And a couple of years ago, some people mentioned this, and you saw it in alternative media. Now, mainstream economists are also talking about it because either you're lying or you're not very smart if you don't see this coming. And like what I just said, you know, every time there is a recession looming, they print more money, which creates more debt, which does more damage to the economy. Just as a side note, when you print a lot of money, you create more inequality, productivity decreases because bad management at companies is being rewarded. A lot of damage is done. So, and of course, what we now see, I mean, Corona is, of course, terrible, but it's just a catalyst. It's not the cause of what's happening. So what we're seeing is the end game, and we're just drowning in debt, and all they do is throw more fuel to the fire. So what to do? At one point, I mean, you can print a lot of money, but at one point, this is how hyperinflation starts. People don't trust the money anymore. Money is all about trust. Even gold is backed by trust. I mean, you and I, maybe you own gold, I don't know. But we own it because we think that it will preserve its purchasing power. And it has done so for thousands of years. So it's likely true. But all money is backed by trust. Now, the money by central banks, the Fed curve, are also backed by trust, but this trust is waning. The risk is that you get a severe collapse in the use from fiat currencies, and when there's a flight from fiat currencies, of course, you get a lot of inflation. Now, the central banks also want inflation because it would lower the debt burden.
Yes.
But okay, let's not make it too complicated. The thing is that now we are heading into the next stage of this, financial collapse. There are also people thinking about, okay, what to do next. And when the trust in the money is gone, they need to peg it to an anchor again, such as gold. That is what I think is going to happen. I think at one point they have no option than to go back to a gold standard. It doesn't have to be any gold standard that we have seen previously, like the classic gold standard from the 19th century, right, or the Bretton Woods was the gold standard. It can be something else. I really don't know, but I'm quite sure they need some kind of anchor again to stabilize the international monetary system and to get back trust in their currencies. So then you have to back it with gold again. The thing is that what I think is happening now is that no country wants to be the first to go on a gold standard. For example, if China goes to a gold standard right now, their currency would appreciate very much, and that would hurt their export, damage their economy. So I think what's happening is that all economies are just, will destroy their currencies and will go halfway into the abyss. And when it's clear that there's a solution, they will likely organize a new conference, such as Bretton Woods, and
come up with a global thing, something global.
And agree on a new international monetary system, and in my opinion, which will incorporate gold, yeah.
The other day I was working out what the United States owns. They claim they own, it's alleged, we don't know for sure, 8,000 something tons, and I think it's 255 ounces. And if you work that out at $2,000 an hour, $2,400 an ounce, at about $30 trillion, and that's about pretty close. We don't know for sure because they took away M2 numbers and M1 numbers years ago. But I did the math. Do you know what it comes out to? If you wanted to do $1 for every ounce, it's 0.000086 ounces for every dollar. So you could do a blockchain.
Ounces.
Yeah, 0.000005086 ounces of gold for every dollar if you use the $2,500 at 8,000 tons and about $30 trillion. Interesting,
But did you use M2 or M0 for that?
Well, I think I've studied this pretty well. I think $30 trillion is a pretty fair number of what we know. I calculated it all. Calculated it all.
20. Ah, right.
Right. So I think it's close, but back in the days, 20 years ago, we knew pretty much, right? But now there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, as go on with the money supply. There could be a lot more out there. I don't know. I just used 30.
Yeah.
That was the best number I had at the time.
Right.
Interesting. So what do you think that would work? A blockchain at a fraction. Would that give any value? I mean, you couldn't do an exchangeable currency at that. I mean, that wouldn't make sense. You couldn't be able to exchange, but you think it would give people enough confidence to run with the dollar for a little bit longer?
Well, of course. I mean, if you say to the population from now on, every dollar is backed by gold again, and you open the windows of the banks and of the Federal Reserve, and everybody can redeem their dollars for gold, and people will start doing it, and if that works, I think they will regain trust in the dollar. Depends if you what kind of measurement you use of the dollar. Of course, you have the money supply created by the Federal Reserve, and then you have all the credit outstanding from commercial banks. So that would be something to think about. But
so let me ask you though. So yeah, to your point, I mean, if you had a fraction on a blockchain, I mean, it wouldn't even make sense to do four zeros, points, four zeros. You couldn't exchange that. I guess you could, you know, if you were all on digital blockchain. But if it weren't exchangeable like it was before 1933, right? If it weren't exchangeable for dollars, do you think it would matter to people just thinking that it was backed by a fraction of gold? Do you think that would have any value?
If it's backed by a fraction of gold?
Right.
The thing is that now, like you say, $1 then would be backed by a very tiny amount of gold. But what would happen is that the price of gold would you know, go times 10 or 20 to back the amount of dollars now in circulation, right? So you have a very high gold price if you go back to the, you know, if you want to use the gold the U.S. has at this point, which are 8,000 tons. If you want to back all dollars in circulation with that amount of gold, that weight of gold,
like we just talked about,
you need a very high gold price per ounce. Per ounce, right? Yeah. So, and what you get is, let's say it's $10,000
or 20
ounce
or 20,000.
So, yeah, it could be. It depends on the money supply measure you use. So, what you get then is it's very unlikely, because it just doesn't make sense, that we will go to the bakery and pay with a gold coin, because a gold coin is already worth a lot, and if you raise the gold price, it will be worth more, at least nominally. But this has never been the case, right? I mean, all throughout history, gold was so valuable that nobody went to the grocery store with a gold coin. We often used silver as a medium of exchange, and gold was for large payments and international settlements and things like that. And by the way, by now we have a lot of technology, and so it doesn't, you know, we don't have to carry gold coins around to make daily payments. But if the currency is backed by gold and you can redeem it, then that provides trust in the currency. And we can still just use the paper and the digital dollars, in your case, because you live in the US, as currency to make payments if there's trust in it. So it doesn't matter. Of course, nobody's going to redeem $1 and get 0.0001 troy ounce. Right. I mean, if you want one troy ounce, you need 20 or
But of course, that number, Jan, would go up because the price of gold would go up. No, would it? Let me see. So let's say let's say the 0.000086, the number I did, Jan, was based on $2,500 gold. If gold went to 20,000, help me here, because I'm not a real math guy. Would that 0.00?
If the price of gold goes up, then there is less weight backing $1. Weight.
Less weight. So that number would actually, I would get more zeros?
I guess so. Yeah.
Really? I guess I'd have to do the math on that. Let's see. If you add more value to the gold, and you had the same amount of dollars, would you have less ounces of gold per dollar?
Let me put it like this.
Okay.
Like now there is, suppose the money supply is, there are $10,000 in circulation, and you have 8,000 tons of gold.
Okay.
Right? If you divide those $10,000 by 8,000 tons, you get a lot of gold weight for every dollar. Now, if the dollar supply is 4 trillion and you divide 3 or 4 trillion by 8,000 tons, it becomes less weight backing $1.
Less weight.
Right? So, yeah.
So you'd add more zeros to it, one, just by going to a gold standard. People would get less.
Well, the price of gold rises, yeah.
That's what I mean, wow.
And if the price of gold rises, then every dollar is backed by less gold.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
Because gold makes sense. Is more expensive.
My goodness. Okay, Jan Nieuwenhuis is with us, and we have a lot to talk about here. Gold is fun to talk about because it's really kind of on a tear kind of thing. Jan, stay right there. We're going to take a quick break. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. OneRadioNetwork.com. If you care to join the show, you can do it, 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. One of our trademarks is Know the Source, trademark that we've had for many years. And knowing the source with nutritional products is key, because everybody and their brother, sister are selling things that if you buy, of course, you're going to be able to leap tall buildings with a single bound and everything. And people make a lot of claims. We don't make a lot of claims, but we team up and we have with Shen Blossom, this company, for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. And he's a great guy and I know him. And boy, very high quality. Listen to the way that he makes Hoshu Wu, for example. Just one of the probably 50 products. Well, he has a lot. Previously, with our friend Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom.
A good example of this also is like the Hoshu Wu formula. That is, that's a new one that came out. It's really good because it's a blood builder. A lot of people don't understand that Hoshu Wu is actually toxic if it's not prepared correctly. So I wanted to come out with one that not only features the Hoshu Wu as the king herb in the formula, but it's prepared of a minimum of 14 days. Usually we try and get 20, 21 days of cooking it. So you can think of it as like it's in a slow cooker with black beans. Huh. And it's basically just cooking down and deactivating some of those liver toxic compounds. So we do use that as like the bulk of the formula, but we basically put a lot of like mature ginseng root, like in our root extract. We have the fermented and hydrolyzed pearl powder, reishi stem. And it's got Shu Di Hong, which is like a Romania type family. We got both the prepared warm stuff and then the cool stuff to kind of balance it out in a sense so it doesn't become sticky. If you get a good quality Hoshu Wu that's properly prepared, it definitely has some invigorating qualities to it and makes you feel relaxed, but yet fully vigorous and energized.
Now, that's the kind of Hoshu Wu that you would like, right? Really nice products, as you can hear. If you'd like to order Hoshu Wu or the other products, click on Shen Blossom right there on the front page. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Starving for vitality, we're turning to energy drinks, stimulants, and pharmaceuticals to try to improve our focus, increase our metabolism, rescue our sex drive, and adapt to the stresses of modern-day living. Each year, an elk sheds its impressive antlers, regenerating an even larger set the following year. These velvet antlers have been a revered traditional medicine for thousands of years. Elk antler harnesses the adaptogenic and highly regenerative growth factors from this natural and ethical resource into a concentrated, bioavailable extraction. Its revitalizing effects span bone, muscle, and nerve support, improve metabolism, cellular repair, sexual potency, anti-inflammation, vascular strengthening, and hormone production. Humanely harvested from free-range U.S. elk, extracted in organic alcohol, and protected in Miron glass, our elk antler is available in 3 strengths to restore your vitality at any level.
This is one of the great products from another person that we've known for over 10 years, Daniel Vitalis, and very nice guy. And everything is in Miron glass, like Brandon's products. And right now, pine pollen is on sale, big sale. And that's the compendium to the kind of pair of, we like to get pine pollen and elk velvet antler. And you can get pine pollen at 20% off now, which is really, I'm going to get a couple. And you might even think about getting pine pollen and elk velvet on the auto ship. And he gives you a nice little discount, and then you don't have to worry about it. And you know, you just kind of figure it out, and the money's always there when you always buy ahead like that. I don't know how that works, but so it's pretty cool. We appreciate your ongoing support with these companies. We think that if you're going to spend your money to take care of your health, it's a good thing to get the very best you can. So we have Shen Blossom and Elk Velvet Antler, and Pine Pollen and Sithrival Pine Pollen on sale.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
Okay, we're talking with a real gold bug, Jan Nieuwenhuis and VoimaGold.com. So I'm still kind of confused. I want to go back to this because numbers fascinate me. I just divided 30 trillion by 255 million ounces again, and I get the 0.000085. So you would go, let's say theoretically, you would go to the bank and exchange, I don't know, $100 and get 0.000005 times 100 ounces of gold, right? So the price of gold wouldn't change the math when you exchange. It would just be how much that number is worth, right? Because the gold is worth 20,000. So the number. Yeah.
Sorry, what is your question?
So the question is, I guess I've just seen it. This number, Jan, is only going to change 0.000085 ounces when you increase the money supply, or you increase the amount of gold you own. Right. Those are the two metrics. So, those are the two metrics, right? The money supply.
I think the best, I'm very bad at live math,
that's
but
right.
Maybe I can explain it best by if you can buy potatoes for $10, mm-hmm. and the price of potatoes goes up, it goes to $20, then suddenly you get less potatoes for $10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was why I said there is less gold backing a dollar if the price of gold goes up.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got you. So how would that work if, the G7, D12, whatever they are, they go to Bretton Woods or go somewhere, someplace like Zurich, and they get together someday soon and say, we got to do this whole thing. And we're going to do, I don't know, we'll call it whatever we're going to call it. And they do a digital global currency. I wonder, would they do that? What would that do to all the debt? I'd like to get more clarity on that.
Well, it depends. Look, you, for example, devalue currencies by a lot, and you can raise inflation, like I just said. Suppose you have a min in debt, right? But significant inflation kicks in. You get 3, 4, 5 years of inflation and all prices and wages rises. Then suddenly your debt of 1 million isn't that much, right? So through inflation, you can erode that burden. So it depends how they want to solve the debt. You can restructure debt. That is, for example, you say to all the creditors of the United States, well, you're going to get your money back, but you're only going to get half of it, right?
Right.
So, yeah, China, we owe China, or the U.S. owes China $1 trillion. Now we're going to give you half of it. But that is in history, that has always been a very disorderly way of dealing with the debt burden. What just has often happened was that they spur inflation. This also happened by the after World War. After the Second World War, U.S. public debt to GDP was also above 100%. And what they did is and it's called yield curve control, they controlled the interest rates of all the bonds, of all the maturities, so of 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 year, mm-hmm. 3 year, up until 25 years. And if you hold those interest rates down at, let's say, 1%, and then you increase inflation mm-hmm. to, let's say, 5 or 10%, which mm-hmm. is what happens, mm-hmm. then you erode the debt burden. And this is how the United States came out of debt after the Second World War. Of course, it was wartime then, so you had a narrative to give to the people. The people
right. thought,
yeah, well, we've just been in a war, and it's terrible, and yeah, all have to suffer a little bit. Okay. But this time, of course, it's a bit more difficult. One, there's more debt. And second of all, well, they have a nice scapegoat this time, which is the coronavirus.
I see.
But I'm a little bit drifting here. But
that's all right.
The thing is that what central bank did by creating all this money is they increased inequality in society. And a lot of the social unrest you see now in the U.S., in the United States, is because of monetary policy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? So what happens now when the financial crisis will develop is you will get more social unrest. So I'm a bit about how it will all unfold. you see just so much polarization, right? Not only in the, but also in Europe. I don't know, of course, how it is in China, but in China everything is censored. But yeah, these are very, very tough times. Sorry, what was your initial question?
Well, that's okay. I think we've covered it. So the initial question was, you know, what it would look like if they all got together to do a thing. And I wonder if the IMF, the central bankers, the people that control Dollar Inc., right, these people, they probably control the ECB too. They're all the same crowd, aren't they? I mean, pretty much what we understand.
No, not really. You have the IMF, but the IMF is sort of a remnant of an old... the IMF was created to, let's say, facilitate Bretton Woods. Bretton Woods was a system that was anchored on the dollar and gold. And the IMF was created to help countries if they had short-term balance of payments problems, whatever that may be. The IMF sort of lost its function after 1973. And look, the IMF is, you know, they bring out papers and they say a lot, but, you know, the IMF can't tell Brazil, or, you know, they don't rule the world. It's an organization in through which countries tend to cooperate or talk to each other, just like the BIS. Maybe you heard of
Bank of International Settlements.
Yeah, in Switzerland. If you have a world and every country has a central bank, then you're going to have an institution where these central bankers want to meet each other. And what happens there is sometimes I just read the memoirs of one of the BIS presidents, 60s and the 70s, and you know there are a lot of conspiracies about the BIS. You know, it's just simple, can be explained by countries that have, countries always have their own interest first, I think, and if they meet at the BIS, they maybe cooperate, but they want to cooperate for their own interest. So I don't believe in there's a world government. I also don't think that there's going to be a world digital currency, because they're going to issue it, and that would be very weird and creepy. So no, I don't. If you have a world digital currency, then everybody loses its sovereignty, right? I mean, yeah, just like the
but
US.
But isn't that the vision of these globalists, these people, that they want to have one world government, one big blob of money and people, and, you know, take away borders? And isn't that their vision?
Yeah, some people have that vision. Yeah, that is true. Like, we have in Europe a very big problem now that, you know, it started as a, let's say, a noble idea to have peace in Europe and to have some cooperation in the economic field. And it was also, by the way, to counter the dollar dominance after Bretton Woods broke down. But these people, of course, are bureaucrats and, you know, bureaucracy. That is that if you know, they want to increase their power. And so that's becoming here because more and more power goes to Brussels, right, to the center of Europe, and less is now in the hands of our government here. And so people are worried about it, like me, and some not. Some are very obedient and say, oh, yeah, well, Europe. And so there are also people that want this, the globalists, and want more centralization of power. But you can also see a lot of tension, for example, between China and the U.S. or Russia, U.S. Now, I don't see a lot of cooperation between them, so to say. So I don't think there's going to be a one world government or a one world
You don't think so?
Currency.
If somebody's going to...
No, the beauty, by the way, of a gold standard, if I may add, is that it would be a monetary union without being a union, right? You all use the same currency, gold, but gold is neutral. It's independent of every country. You can print it. So you would be money together, which makes a lot of sense for economic reasons, but it's not a political union. And countries can still devalue their currency relative to gold if they want to, right? It happened on the classical gold standard as well. So, currently I'm quite thinking about that gold standard, the return of the gold standard would be best.
Yeah. Jan Nieuwenhuis is with us. It's voimagold.com. I'm kind of losing you a little bit on your quality. Is your internet doing it, behaving itself? Your speed is, because ours look good here, but I'm kind of losing a little bit of quality in your voice and picture every now and then. Anything?
Yeah, I'm having the same. I have the same in your voice. I hear glitches. Yeah.
Yeah. But we have pretty high speed. Is your internet stable and fast?
Yeah, I was just looking because I heard
me
it
too.
Before the show, and
I was looking too.
But it's still, I'm on my Wi-Fi. It's my normal internet switched to my phone internet.
Yeah,
it would break the connection.
You're still cutting out though, and I'm at 3020 here. I mean, that's not huge, but I don't know why it's doing that. I don't know if there's anything we can do to stop it.
I wouldn't know at this point.
Probably
may
not.
Try a little bit longer and.
Yeah. So Wi-Fi. Maybe that's the thing. It's going through the air. Maybe I don't know. Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. So let's go into talk about some time ago, Jan. China said that they were going to do these oil contracts that if they couldn't fulfill, if I understand, then they were going to back these by gold, right? So something like that. Was that a big move?
It was sort of a big move, but there was a lot of myth created. It was just that China launched a futures contract denominated in currency, the renminbi. Right, so now you can need futures contracts, oil futures contracts, physically deliverable in Shanghai, denominated in renminbi.
Mm-hmm.
So what China wants to do is use renminbi for more commodity trading. So they want to start a share from the dollar because now commodities in the world are traded in. Of course, this is part of dollar hegemony. And China wants to have a share of that, and because it has a lot of benefits if a country like the U.S. or Europe or China can issue a world reserve currency, because then you can print currency and you buy goods abroad, and the people abroad will accept your currency. And those goods are actually free for you because you just print currency. So China wants to internalize their currency and also wants to become a world reserve currency, and trading commodities in their currency is part of that. Now, it's not gold-backed. That was a myth created by gold. I debunked it at the time. There's no connection between that futures contract and gold. So, but it is significant in terms of that more and more commodities in renminbi, and likely the renminbi to increase their share in the world of currencies, although they have still a way to go.
Okay.
Technical reasons.
Yeah. I got to take a little break here because somehow I'm not liking the audio is cutting out on you, and I don't know why.